Hello and welcome to Living Downstream. I'm Julie Lowe, the Environmental and Education Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and one of the hosts of Living Downstream. Our topic today is communication styles and how to understand ourselves and each other better in order to communicate more effectively with each other in a complicated culture where everyone has their own specific goals and intentions. I'm delighted to be welcoming again Dr. Jean Erickson-Walker, a communications and career coach, an educator, and a Loop public speaker. Jean has had a fascinating life being raised on a small ranch in the Badlands. She's written several books, and traveled to 49 countries and immersed herself in their cultures and guided countless individuals toward realizing their professional aspirations. But the common thread that has woven through all her work has been the issue of communication. Jean, can you tell us more about this topic?
I'm delighted to be with you and talk about this topic that means so much to all of us, and yet we're all very often totally confused. What I said is somehow not what you heard. And what I heard is not what you intended me to hear. So we wonder why it goes round in circles. But the fact of the matter is, 93% of communication is not the words we speak. It's body language, facial expression, tone of voice. So when we think about how we're communicating, we have to realize that we have never had the experience with ourselves that other people have with us. Body language. I don't see my body language unless I walk by a store window and then I think, oh, I don't recognize this person. A facial expression. I only see my facial expression in the morning for 10 minutes when I'm doing my hair. That's always a bad hair day. So I think that's what I look like all day. Tone of voice. Whenever you've ever heard yourself in a recording, you don't recognize that person. So how do we ever communicate effectively when we're only dealing with words and not aware of all the impacts all of these have on us? So one way is looking at the work of Dr. Carl Jung. He was the Austrian psychologist in the late 1800s who has come to be known as the father of communication. He believed that people fall into four different styles of communication. There's a communication style assessment that I use with all of my clients. And the truth of the matter is, I use it every day, all day in my life. When I'm here in the United States, where I live, or if I'm in an international country. Because the fact of the matter is, I don't speak foreign languages. Lord knows I have tried enough. And my kids used to say that mom knows how to say hello, goodbye, thank you, excuse me, and where's the bathroom in 12 languages. But as much as I study, I really never become fluent in any other language. So I'm left pretty much with body language, facial expression, and tone of voice, that 93% of communication. So how do I get by with that? Well, according to Dr. Jung, I can do it by understanding that who the person is, what really drives them, what's important to them, how they see the world, how they interact with the world, can be defined by one of four styles. And those four styles then are reflected in what we call the communication styles. The assessment I used is called the I Speak Communication Style Assessment. And that's exactly what it teaches us to do, is how can we speak more effectively by understanding ourselves, how we're coming across, and thus understanding other people and how they are coming across to us. Recognizing those characteristics helps us to manage ourselves and thus helps us to manage relationships. So let's get to the four styles that he talks about. The fact of the matter is, we have all probably taken a number of these little assessments because we see them in the dentist's office or we see them in a magazine or maybe at work or at school, we've taken assessments. They're all about communication, we're told, and every one of them goes back to his work. He believed people fit into these four styles. Number one is data, the person who wants charts, graphs, facts, data. We call that in the I Speak world, a thinker. And I tend to show it on a whiteboard as a box. These are people who want things controlled in a box, predictable.
Sounds like architects and engineers.
Architects, engineers, definitely finance people, and very often people in technology. Okay. Things that you need this to be exact, and you need it to be that way tomorrow and the next day and next month and next year.
Right.
So they like rules and regulations.
Okay.
They're my box people. The second style he called the action person. And in I speak, we call it the sensor. I diagram that with a check mark. Right. I always have an image of them going around with a clipboard, and they have a whole list of things to get done this day, and they're checking them off one very quickly. They make decisions quickly. They move quickly. They are in action. You know, people say sometimes that chaos follows them. No, actually, they create chaos, right? But they also get a heck of a lot done. And I always notice that if you want something done and you want it done now, their time frame is now, they will get it done, and they get much more done in a day than anyone else. It isn't always the right thing, and it isn't always done correctly. And they always put more into a day on that imaginary list than can be done. So I think of them as being people who put 26 hours in any 24 and get an awful lot done. The third style is the ideas person. We call it the intuitor. I tease them that they are up on pink marshmallow clouds floating, right? They float around from here to here. Once they're here, they've seen that. Now they're off on another idea. They live in the world of what might be, but is not yet. The world of the future, the world of potential. Now, what happens then is they are easily distracted, right?
Right.
And as a result, they don't tend to actually get things done, but they are the paradigm shifters of the world. They are the ones who create the new concepts, the new ideas, who see into the future, have a vision of things that are not yet here.
So like inventors or artists?
Artists, creators, any creators, really.
Musicians, maybe.
Exactly. Anything. And it's, you know, we don't have to always think of people who are expert at things. We can think of somebody you know that has a lovely home, you know, and you go to it and you realize it's just an interesting place to be. And everything, the colors all go together in an interesting way, but it's not static. It's not like a thinker home where everything will match exactly. There'll be things that are just kind of, you say to yourself, I would never have thought of that. You think of the person whose attire is always interesting.
Right.
It engages your curiosity. Then the fourth style is what he called the people person.
Right.
We call it the feeler, and I diagram it always with a heart.
Right.
The feeler is an amazing, they have an amazing sense. I think of them as their antenna is always out. They can sense how people are feeling. They can walk into a room and go directly to the person that is feeling sad or lonely or unwelcome. They are caretakers of the world. They can also have the opposite. And whenever you talk about any characteristics, you're also going to get the opposite, right? So there's also the type of feeler that sees themselves as the center of the universe.
Oh, a narcissist, perhaps. Okay.
Yes. That can be very confusing to you because you can sense that this person is a feeler. You can sense them. I mean, they connect with you. Like you walk into a room, anyone walks into a room and you gravitate toward them. You don't know why, but it's like this antenna is out and it's enfolding. But you don't know whether that is the person who is interested in taking care of you or whether that's a person who wants you to take care of them. So it's kind of like a honey trap.
Okay.
It draws you to it. So when you look at these characteristics, you think, all right, why do I care about this? Why is it important? Well, first of all, we want to know how we're coming across to people. So when we take an assessment of this type, we take this assessment and we learn that, oh, I didn't realize that I come across in this way.
Right.
One thing to remember is that everyone has when you take this particular test, and all of these tests will have some sort of characteristic like this, but there in this particular one, there are 90 points. So it's a total of 90. And each one of us has all four characteristics.
Okay, so you don't just have to be one or the other. You don't have to just claim one team or the other team.
Yeah. And you can't choose to. because of or in spite of yourself, you have all fair characteristics and you use them every day. The difference is, I always say that if I have a client I'm working with and they have a characteristic that is 20 or above, that's pretty darn strong. So if you think about that, if that person has 90 points, each one of them is going to be 20 plus, they're strong. And once in a while, you'll run into somebody that they go across the board, they're almost even. That means they're equally comfortable in any one of these four characteristic styles. On the other hand, I had a person once who had a 38. All right, with that 38, then think, where are the other three styles? Where are they spread out?
What was that 38?
As I recall, that was an intuitor.
Intuitor. So like a musician or a philosopher or an inventor. So they had some really awesome ideas. Did they ever realize any of their ideas?
Only, you want to know why we want to know about this?
Right.
Because we need to find ways of filling ourselves, rounding ourselves out and our effectiveness and success potential in life, in all aspects of life, in all aspects, whether it's careers or whether it's getting a task done or whether it's interacting with people. So it's important for us to understand our characteristics and to draw around us people who fulfill the aspects that are low. For example, I'm a very low thinker. So details, things that have to be done exactly correctly.
Like following a map or a blueprint, putting together Legos, maps for Legos.
I just finished that task of the year that all of us dread. I just finished my taxes. Anything that has to do with absolute accuracy and detail by the rules, by the laws. But I was very, very fortunate. My mother was a feeler thinker.
Oh, wait, so she's two things.
Well, we all are. See, we all are all four.
Okay.
But she was strong in those two characteristics.
In two. Okay, so you can be strong in two.
Well, we can be strong in three. See, if the person who had a 38 was going to have at least two that were very, very low.
Right.
See, just think about when you take this test, you find out where do you balance out. And some people will be very strong in one thing and they will be very low in another. Some people will be kind of just in middle of all of them. And it tells us what we need, what and when we need to pull them up. My mother taught me, people who know me well would say I'm highly organized. That's not instinctive, folks. That's my mother taught me how much easier if I organized. In my little tiny bedroom up under the eaves and the ranch house, in the dark, because we didn't have electricity, I had to have glasses from the time I was six. My mother got me a little tiny table and put it beside my bed. Because when I woke up at night, if I was frightened and I had a flashlight, I couldn't find the flashlight and I couldn't find my glasses. And I would panic. But she put this little table there and she taught me from the time I was tiny, put things back where they belong and they'll always be there waiting for you. What a wonderful concept. When I'm in my car, I'm a very high intuitor feeler, really high feeler intuitor.
Okay.
And I'm in my car. I want my car, the inside of my car, to be immaculate, to be everything in its place. Because if it isn't, it's a distraction. And quite frankly, you don't want to be driving on the highway with me if my car is a mess.
Okay, because that's what I was thinking. Why would you have everything in place if you said you're an intuitor?
Because my mother taught me to pull up my thinker. I have all four skills.
Okay.
But the thinker is only like a 14. So she taught me pull up. She didn't know the words thinker or any of this kind of thing. But she taught me to be highly organized, which would bring peace and stability in my life and predictability when I needed it. And when I'm driving, I certainly need as much predictability as I can have.
Okay. So even if it's not your thing by nature, you can use tools, you can remind yourself, you can catch yourself in situations and remind yourself to lean on that other skill from another thinking style that you need at this
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you develop it as much as you can. You're not, you know, I'm never going to be a genius in this, right? But I can develop, I can strategies, processes, routines in order to, for example, get my taxes done.
Okay.
And so I want to lead in my life with my strengths, always, whatever those are, right?
Because naturally you're best at that and you will probably produce best using your strengths.
Interestingly enough, my observation with hundreds and hundreds of clients over the years is most often we marry the person that completes the whole.
Oh, okay.
My husband was a thinker feeler. So he was the strong thinker. He was a very low intuitor. I was a very high intuitor.
Okay, here's what I'm struggling with. I hear your descriptions of these people types, right? And of course, right. I immediately think of myself, right? And I want to be what I think to me sounds the coolest. And I want to be that person.
Ah.
Let's say someone always wanted to be a musician. Like they always wanted to play in a rock band. So you've now told me a musician is probably an intuitor. So if I had to decide for myself and I wanted to be a musician, I would say, I think I'm an intuitor because it sounds cool. And I'm also, by the way, not a thinker. So I can't imagine marrying someone who's a thinker because I don't think I would like me to be a thinker. So why would I like someone else who's a thinker? This is what I'm wondering. Like, is this something that we're, I don't want to say stuck with, but is this someone who we are? Or like you talk about your tests, can we trick this test? Can I take this test or one of these tests and make sure all my questions come out to prove me as an intuitor? Because I think that's what I think is cool.
Okay. You've now asked me about 5 questions. So
yes.
You have to keep us on track and be sure I answer all 5.
Alrighty.
Right? Yes, I believe if you set out to do so, you could sway the test, but who are you kidding?
Yeah.
If you take a test, you're taking it because there's some reason you think it might give you information or knowledge that will help you. But
right.
If you're playing games with yourself, there's no point to it.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Now, the second thing is what you referred to, which I get a kick out of. It's called the Barnum effect. The Barnum effect by this famous person who came up with this is you use something. The point is that flattery leads people to identify with descriptions that are considered desirable.
Right.
The Barnum effect. So when you decide, okay, I want to sway this, you have a family member who took this before, you know, before she knew what it was all about,
mm-hmm.
and she took it honestly, just did what it said.
Right.
But then when she discovered what the scores were, she decided, well, that's not what I want to be. I
right.
want to be this.
Right.
So she took it again and, of course, got entirely different scores and says, but that's what I want to be. Well, let me tell you something. This is not about what I might want to be. It's about what I am. And the truth of the matter for me is what I would really like to be is very tall. My mother was 6 foot tall. And the rest of my family were all tall. And I came along much later in the family, and I'm the shrimp. So I'm 5'5". All my life, I've wanted to be tall because to me, if you're tall, you're important, right? So, you know, I always say that I didn't get to be tall and didn't get to be important, right? So the other thing I really wanted awfully badly is curly hair. Neither of those is going to happen. So if I take a test that I sway it, I give them the wrong information, and it comes back saying that I'm 6 foot and I have curly hair, actually, nothing has changed. I still
right.
have very straight hair, and I'm 5'5".
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in it. I mean, it's silliness and, you know, no. My belief so much, and I have this little bit of a fantasy, which I believe that the whole world is a big puzzle. People mm-hmm. in it are a big puzzle. Each one of us has our own special puzzle piece. And it's just the only piece that is just like it is me. And I'm exactly who and what I am supposed to be. So my goal in life is to be the very best I can be of me. And so it's a lifelong journey to discover all the details of who this intriguing, interesting person is, not to try to be something else. So every one of these scores, every one of these styles is equally wonderful, equally wonderful. And I'm going to get back to now a question that I remember. Why would you want to marry somebody who is your opposite? Because
right.
you don't like that, right?
Right.
Okay. I wish I could show you this, but take your hands, open up your fingers, have your hands face each other, and open wide your fingers. Now slide your hands together, and do you see how it creates a hole?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have found is most typical in marriages and close friendships. You will have a characteristic that is alike, and you will invariably, at least very, 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 very frequently, have a characteristic in the other person that is your opposite.
Hmm.
So together you create a whole.
Okay.
Where my husband was a thinker-feeler, I was a feeler-intuitor.
And you mentioned feeler first because that's your little bit stronger than your intuitor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you mentioned your first. Okay. That makes sense.
So let me just give you an example. I'll use myself as an example. My scores are very much the same. I'm a feeler 28. I'm an intuitor 25.
Okay, pretty close.
A sensor 23. And way down is the thinker 14.
Oh, okay. So 10 points
huge
or something.
Gap.
Yeah.
Huge gap. But the other three are close enough that they can kind of, they work together a lot in my life. Now, one of the best things about the iSpeak assessment, which is not true of any other assessment, and there are, you know, many of them on the market, it's the only one that gives you a score of how you are in what I consider your Joe Blow day, just going along a typical day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they also give you a score of how you are in crisis.
Oh, so you don't respond the same?
You may or you may not.
Oh.
It's an incredibly important and useful, amazingly useful. And so what happens is it's so fascinating for me as a counselor, because sometimes I'll find somebody that they're almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Okay, that's somebody that I consider very easy to live and work with, because the person you see today or at any time of the day is the same person you see tomorrow and next week. Their styles of communication and thinking are the same. Of course, I have to tease them. So I say, that means you're consistent. If you're a jerk, you're always a jerk.
Oh, yeah.
So I tease them about it. People who do what I call flipping, and that might be that their highest score normally is their lowest score in crisis. It's really important for them to realize it, because that body language, facial expression, and tone of voice are going to reveal them when it is not to their advantage or to the advantage of the person we're dealing with. If they're in crisis and they're coming across as an entirely different person, it's very difficult. So for that person, I work with them to have them identify where they are themselves at that moment, and to tell people. An example for me is I used to have an office in downtown Portland, and it was a catty corner across was a low place in the street where rainwater would gather.
Mm-hmm.
So before I had learned about this test, so I would come back, you know, after being out for lunch for a walk, and invariably a car would splash muddy water all over me.
Uh-huh.
So I would get up to my office and walk in like hell-bent for leather. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, my whole body language was screaming, and my tone of voice and my facial expression were just screaming, until I learned about this test. I used to do Myers-Briggs, which doesn't have these kinds of advantages. And when I started taking this, I thought, oh, what am I doing to people when I walk in? Because my clients and the staff would think I was angry with them. So I learned very quickly that when I walk through that door, I take a deep breath, I keep my hands down at my side, and I come in and I lower my voice and I say, oh, this car just splashed water all over me. Then I can guarantee you everybody in the office is going to feel sorry for me, which is going to make me feel wonderful. And in fact, I had a wonderful assistant once who would go get me a cup of chamomile tea. So suddenly we're all on the same train. We're all taking care of Jean, which is a very good thing, I think. I'm not giving the wrong communication, because my being upset had nothing to do with the people there. And people range across the whole wide range. Now, for crisis, for me, I remain a 28 feeler.
Hmm.
My whole thing in life is people. It's the thread that goes through my whole life. I really, really care about people. And I have insatiable curiosity to learn about them. what motivates them, what interests them, what do they really care about, what brings them joy, what brings them strength. So it's this caring, but I am the same person as far as caring mm-hmm. about them, always. That dominates everything in my life, and I love it. But where in normal situation, my second score was intuitor, I'm thinking what I consider big, profound thoughts, right?
Right.
And I'm thinking about their futures, and I'm thinking about, is this good for them? Is this not good for them? How can I help them? How can I create something that will be beneficial to them?
Mm-hmm.
And then next comes my sensor, which means I'll take action on that. But in crisis, my first is still feeler, but my second is now sensor. And my sensor goes 25, they just reverse. So right. I'm going to now take, that's when the hugs.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care of them right now. I'm going to pick them up off the street. I'm going to patch them together. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make them whole and happy. And then we'll talk about ideas in the future,
mm-hmm.
about tomorrow. And my poor thinker stays low, which is why I always had an assistant that I chose specifically to be a strong thinker.
Okay, this still makes me worry about what I am and is it good enough? So it seems to me thinkers are the math folk. So it seems to me they're the intelligent people. So, right, does this have anything to do with IQ? Like, are thinkers all the smart ones? And are the intuitors kind of the, I mean, I guess they're creative, but do they get anything done? And are sensors just obnoxious to live with? Do you know what I mean? Is there an intelligence variable to all of this?
Absolutely not, which is such a wonderful relief to me to learn at this, as I grew older in my life. Because when I was in school, way back when, you were considered smart if you got A's in math.
Right.
Now, I took a philosophy course. I was always very, very good in anything having to do with anything that was linguistic intelligence and what we call that, and word smart. And right. I love to read. But that was just considered that wasn't. So finally, I remember way back when I was studying child psychology, when I was in my first degree, and I learned then that people said at that time there were 6 or 7 types of intelligence.
Right.
In about 1983, Howard Gardner, a theorist, wrote a book called Frames of Mind,
yep.
where he broadens the definition of intelligence, outlines several distinct types. And he came up with 8. So one is linguistic. I mean, you'd know these if you can kind of figure it out. The second is logical, mathematical, which we now include technology. The other is spatial. You can see 3D. You can see right. things and be able. So driving, it'd be wonderful. We all had better that. The other is kinesthetic, which is body. And so often people in this are in sports, that kind of
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Musical intelligence, interpersonal, people smart.
Right.
Intrapersonal is you understand yourself. And now you'll be happy to hear it because now they have one that they call the naturalist. Nature.
Oh,
smart.
There we go.
So see, you're home free, right?
Right, there we okay. go. That's mine.
So it's so important with all of these to recognize they're equal. And think about that, even with your children. So often or other people's children, or you'll have conversations and you're talking about, and you'll say, well, that person is so good with people. Or you'll say, our son from the time he was tiny would build these elaborate block structures.
Mm-hmm.
I would have no idea how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I'd have no interest in it. But that's the thing. It's not only what you're good at, but what you instinctively are interested in. And so sometimes people will say, well, I thought this was supposed to be just how you communicate.
Right.
The communication comes from whom you are if it is genuine.
Okay.
And that's the whole thing.
I want to put this in a real scenario, perhaps, so our listeners understand what we're talking about. And this is not real. Let's pretend we're on the Titanic, right? And we're sinking. Yep. And we have 4 people on there. Well, we have a bunch of people. But we have 4 characters in our play who are going to save us. Got it?
Okay.
All right. So if I correct me as I give you a scenario, the data person right? The thinker, I guess we call it the thinker, is counting all the boats, right? All the life raft. All right, he's counting all the boats, and he knows how many people we have, and we know how many boats we have, and maybe his job stops there. He can now tell you exactly how many boats, how many people.
And where they are.
And the feeler is running around hugging everybody and holding babies and kissing cheeks and just comforting people. But there we are. The intuiter maybe is, he's blowing up balloons. He's thinking of calling some porpoises to come drag the boat. I don't know. He's thinking grand thoughts about what we could do. And there we are. And the sensor is shoving people in boats. Am I right?
Yep.
Now, the sensor might not get everybody, and he might not get the right people, and he might not do it right. But the sensor just saved everybody. Am I right? Not everybody, but he saved some.
Well, the ones he didn't push over the boat because he pushed too hard.
Right. So here I didn't have good feelings about the sensor, but maybe in an emergency, we needed our sensor after all.
We need all four. You know, I haven't used that example, but I will in the future because it's pretty cool. And it's certainly more dramatic. Mine is you come to a forest with all four people.
Okay.
And you come to the forest and the thinker starts counting the trees and then counts the branches and then divides the number of leaves according to branches. So he comes up with a fascinating total. Fascinating, probably or not. The intuiter comes and says, oh, forest. This could be a new town. We can make great, wonderful things. It could be a park, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we have, who didn't I say? Sensor wants to come up and cut all the trees down.
And then we have the feeler.
The feeler goes and hugs the tree.
Okay.
See?
So everybody's approach is not necessarily wrong.
Oh, no. For instance, I talk a lot when I'm working with companies, I talk a lot about teams. I won't take a client that we don't do this kind of assessment. So both of us have more information before we start working together, right? But another time we use it is when I'm working with a company and I'm in charge of doing their interviewing and selecting new executives and senior managers. I am always looking at the balance of the team. I've done a lot of work with manufacturing, interestingly. And in manufacturing, you are bound to have a lot of sensors. And you're probably going to have a lot of thinkers. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to have very, 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 very few feelers.
Because in manufacturing, the product's pretty much already made, right?
So no, you're making the product and getting it out, but it's all hardcore stuff.
I was thinking it's already designed. So we don't need the intuitors anymore.
No, you'll have some intuitors. Because it depends on the company, of course, you know, and what they're doing. But in general, you'll have strong sensor thinkers, and you may have a couple of intuitors if you're continuing to do design for customers.
Okay, right.
But your feelers will be like non-existent. But you know what? It is the happy place to be. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I find so often is, yes, we may be hiring an engineer, but I'm not going to be that interested in an engineer with a 10 feeler, but I will be interested in an engineer who is high in the scores he needs to be, but also has up close to that 20. It makes all the difference. The other thing to be thinking about here, which is a different type of way of looking things, you know, so often you don't have anything to say about who's in your group, you know, I mean, it could be a neighborhood. You know, it could be a committee, it could be whatever. You have what you have. So what's important is to see each other as a resource for each of us. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is the Achilles heel in the culture of the United States is competitiveness. And I understand, you know, if you're running a race or you have a basketball team, you're competing. But the thing is, there's too much competing among individuals. In everything, a need to be right. Mm-hmm. A need, even if you're wrong, to not admit you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Status. People who have an image of themselves that they spend an untold amount of time and attention trying to maintain. Mm-hmm. It gets back to your talk about, you know, the Barnum effect, right? I want to come across as this way. Right. A lot of waste energy and time. When you're part of a group, look to each other for their strengths. You know, if you and I are doing something, you will see things that I didn't see because of your characteristics. And so with my husband, he would see things that I would have thought, oh, that's not important. In the meantime, he was taking care of all those details.
Right.
We all have all the characteristics. When I was with my husband, it made me more conscious of thinker. So I was a better thinker because I was thinking of how he would look at it or what he would like it to be. So I was anticipating his interests and his needs, which was making me practice, if you want to say that, pull up my thinker. So we enrich each other. It's back to that big fantasy puzzle. Mine is not the only piece in that puzzle. It's how I work my piece into the puzzle by being the best I can be at what I am, but respecting every other puzzle, because one puzzle piece does not a puzzle make.
Okay, well, let me turn this around the other way, because we've been talking about a lot about what I am or you are or we are. Right? I'm an intuitor, I'm a thinker, I'm a feeler, and therefore I'm good at math or I'm good at music or I'm good at whatever. However, how does this help me communicate? Because I may know all I want to know about me, but
good
how
idea.
Does it
good
help
point.
Me communicate? Let me say, you know, there's a lot of diverse people here in the Umpqua Watershed Valley, and it's lovely and it's wonderful and I adore it. But we can argue a bit, just like every other culture and community. And let's say I have a neighbor. And we have a fence between us, right? Let's say my dogs run farther than the fence than they should run. Now, let's say I need to talk to my neighbor about my dogs. And let's say I want to win the argument. And I might say something like, you know what? My dogs really need to run. They need the squirrels on your land. They need the turkeys. You must understand the turkeys are on your property. You must understand they need to go over there. And won't you feel for the dogs? Won't someone care about the dogs? Now, if he's not a guy who may be a feeler and he could also empathize with me and my dogs, that might not be the best approach for him. What if he is something like a data, or what do you call it? You call it a thinker. What if he's like a data person or a thinker? And he's like, no, the fence is where the fence is. And that is how we live together. And that is what we need to do, because he likes fences and he likes things in their places. First of all, how would I know that about him? How could I look at him and interpret what he might be? And then how could I use language, quite frankly, that would appeal to him more than would be natural to me?
Perfect. Okay, here we go.
Sorry, that's a long story.
No, this is good. This is exactly what we need. Okay, first of all, remind me when I'm done with this little bit, I'll come back and tell you how you could tell what he was.
Okay.
But right now, let's assume you are correct that he is a thinker. All right. No touchy-feely stuff. No emotion. Your body language, your face should be very straight, very serious. No pleasantries. It's a lovely day. He doesn't care.
Okay. And we're assuming he's a thinker. So to him, I would not. And let's just say I'm a feeler. I wouldn't ask him about how his wife is or his kids or his dogs.
No.
I wouldn't. So I'd keep it businesslike. Is that what I'm talking about?
Always. And very emotionless. In other words, let's just say that you came up to his house and you saw lovely flowers.
Okay.
And you saw his wife out doing something with them. And so your natural inclination was to wave at her.
Right.
He hasn't come out of the house yet.
Okay.
So you're going to wave at her and you're going to say, these flowers are just lovely. You must really have a touch with plants. Mm-hmm. You know, I have roses at my house, and I would just love to hear, you know, what you think about,
No. Okay.
You are Mrs. Lowe and you are here to speak to Mr. Thinker.
Okay.
And that's it. And when he comes out, you are precise. My understanding is that my dog came down to your house last Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
You have your quote, your presentation all organized. As far as I know, that is the first time. And I want you to know that this is exactly what we're doing to deal with it.
Okay.
I discovered that he had dug out of the fence. We have not only repaired that, but filled it in with rock and concrete where he dug out. We no longer put him outside when we're gone. See, everything is down, you know, and you speak slowly and precisely.
Okay.
Don't speak in your normal voice, which is faster, right?
Okay.
Then at the end, you say, will this be satisfactory? I want you to know that we will do everything we can to prevent this happening again. I appreciate your bringing it to our attention.
Okay.
Don't say you appreciate his understanding. He doesn't understand. He has no intention of understanding. Don't say, isn't it a lovely day? Don't ask him how he is. For heaven's sakes, don't do that.
So even if I'm a feeler, that's my kind of problem at that moment. I'm speaking to him, so I need to talk to him in basically
yes.
his language. Okay.
Think about going to a foreign country.
Right.
When you go to Greece, it's a really good idea if you do know how to say hello, goodbye, thank you, excuse me, and where's the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
You may not be fluent in it, but you show them the courtesy. And one of the things that I do when I travel, I spend a lot of time on research about customs, what people wear, what they eat, their beliefs.
Right.
And sometimes people will say, well, you have to be yourself. No, no, no. I'm in their country. So when I'm there, I want to be as unobtrusive and to not mess with their lives.
Right.
So in this case, you went to see him because you've already messed with his life. Right.
All right. So I'm going to his country. So if I want to be effective in speaking with him, I need to speak his quote language.
Think about this. Do you want him to hear what you say?
Right.
Then speak his language. Now give me another one.
Okay. I'm trying to switch it up now.
That was a thinker.
Let's say I have a neighbor, and these are not accurate scenarios, I'm just saying. But let's say I have a neighbor, and their house is a hot mess. Their yard is a hot mess, but it's really cool. But their weeds are, they're not weeds, they're lovely flowers that have grown crazy like a jungle. And it's, some people might say their house is unkept, but it's kind of cool. They don't have non-native invasive plants. They have native plants. They are just everywhere. And they're encroaching on my fence. And I like to keep my land very clean and crisp and straight. And in fact, they have a lovely exotic native tree that has fallen on my fence. And now I'm mad. So now I'm going to storm over there. And by the way, I'm a thinker now, because remember, I like my land all proper and trimmed.
Okay.
And I
okay.
like my fences. But they're kind of a hot mess over there. I mean, it's lovely and fun if you want to live in the jungle, but I'm a thinker, and their tree is now falling over my fence. And so now I'm mad. Now, this is not me, because we all know I'm not a thinker, but let's pretend I am. And this crazy neighbor with all the little knickknacks and stuff all over the yard, it's all fallen into my yard. So how do I approach this neighbor? First of all, am I looking at another neighbor who's a thinker? Am I looking at a neighbor who's a sensor? Am I looking at a feeler? Who am I looking at based on their yard description?
Oh, totally intuitor.
Oh, okay.
Totally intuitor. Totally. And you're now talking with an intuitor, so you need to chill out.
So no clipboard in business presentation. Oh,
and no list. And try to relax your body language.
Okay.
Because thinkers are very precise. My husband was a strong thinker. He never wrinkled. His clothes were always precise. So if you're a thinker, you're probably pretty precise and pretty done up.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're dressed fancy, but everything is precise. So try to loosen your body language. You know, do this with your shoulders before you get out.
Okay.
And just kind of chill out a little bit and recognize you're going to be there for a while. So it's not like you're going to the Esso Film up to get a tank of gas. You're going to be there a while, and you're going to have a conversation. So don't get impatient. And so you come up and you say, find something you like. There's always something you can like. Okay. So you talk about that flower. That's such an interesting flower. What is that? So let them, and they'll go off on tangents. So you have to gently bring them back to another topic. But you have to make nice. You have to make friends. You have to get them to realize that you genuinely and care. And remember, it's back to what I said earlier. You have to genuinely care about people to communicate effectively.
Regardless of your style.
Doesn't make any difference. And it may not be what you would choose to spend your time with a lot, but you can darn well spend the next 20 minutes with this person, and you can come to understand, and you can come to be interested I mean, golly, these are interesting plants.
Right.
And so you can learn something. I have to always be learning and growing. And each person with whom I come in contact, I learn something.
Right.
It could be the simplest thing, but it's like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And you've already admitted you thought it was kind of cool. So you can go with that. Okay. So then remember that you're going to try to move the topic from the pretty plant my, you have a lot of plants here, don't you? You know, and there's such a wide variety. I think that's so interesting. You know, I've noticed that this tree has now fallen over into our yard. You know, would it be okay if I mean, you know, I would really like to have it moved, but I'd be happy to have my husband and I come and help move that. I mean, you want to, first of all, this person's not going to get it done by themselves. So they're in a tutor. So they're not going to get it done. And they have all the good intentions of the world and would be happy to have it done. And by golly, if you and Chris go over there and he brings a saw and the two of you, and if you can bring your son along, that'd be real handy too. And by the time you're done, you'll have the tree taken care of. You'll have a new friend. And maybe he'll even give you one of the plants that you like so much.
Right.
You have to work with what is customary in Greece.
All right. Well, what if the same scenario, but I'm a censor, which means I just don't have time. I have 10 minutes today to get this, to get that. And I need you to focus, move the tree. And I don't care where you put the tree, because now I'm not a thinker, right? If I was a thinker, I'd care where you put the tree. But now I'm a censor and I just need it taken care of and I need to go about my business and we all need to get out of here. I need to just
face reality.
I'm in their country.
The reality is that person is never going to move that tree. You can go to court. You can do all this la 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 stuff. You can go to court. You can carry on and you can both be unhappy forever. And that person means well. They're not doing it to torment you, but they just don't ever get anything done. On the other hand, if you're a censor and you're a smart one, you come and you say, you know, Sam, I know that you've got an awful lot going on here, an awful lot to take care of. I wonder if you'd mind if I brought my son over to help me to cut the tree that's over on our side. And that person invariably will say, oh, that'd be real nice. I'd sure appreciate that. You get the tree done. Everybody's happy.
Okay. So despite all these communication styles, we could still all of us be neighbors. Like there's no good guy or bad guy in any of these scenarios. It's just how you talk to each other. You recognize the other person's what would appeal to them, basically, and you use their language, which doesn't mean you're lying. It doesn't mean you're being manipulative. It's just you're speaking in their literal language, so they hear you.
You're speaking Greek.
Yeah.
And you're showing you care, and you care about them as a human being. They're not just something that is in your way to get rid of. Too many people face difficult situations like the other person is their enemy.
Right. Okay, I love scenarios. This is where we're going now.
Okay.
All right, let's just make a practical example. You know, we all have to interview. It doesn't really matter what the job is in my scenario here, but I am going to go interview. And it doesn't matter what I am either, because now I'm learning from you. It maybe doesn't matter so much what I am, except to recognize things about me. But we're talking about communication, which means I'm talking to someone else. So really, I don't really matter right now.
Yes.
So whoever I am, sensor, thinker, feeler, intuitor, I go into an office to interview, right? It doesn't even matter what the job is right now. As I walk into that office, what clues are going to tell me who my interviewer is or what communication style will appeal most to them without even having said a word to this person?
It's critical. Okay. Absolutely critical. And it's pretty easy. That's what's interesting. So for me, because I have strong body movements, I have to keep my hands down. And I have to walk more slowly than I normally do. And I have to speak more slowly and more softly till I see who's behind that door.
Absolutely. Okay, regardless of who you're going to do. Okay.
I don't know who's behind that door.
Okay.
Right? If I haven't seen them, you know, or I haven't been able to research them and get any kind of clues, which all of which I would try to do, then I darn well don't know what, I don't know what I'm facing there. So I have to be almost, what's a word? I don't know. I have to be an amoeba.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I have to
flexible.
I have to be flexible. I have to be able to go. So they open the door And I noticed that, first of all, let's take it down the row. It's a thinker because, as I said, perfectly groomed.
Okay.
If it's a man and they have a, you know, regular shirt, I mean, it's tucked in really mm-hmm. well. No t-shirts, no sweatshirts, no loosey-goosey stuff, right?
Okay.
And the pants are going to be trim, fit well, you know, no doubt have a belt, and right. it's a good quality belt. It looks like. And then I quickly, I glance around, and this is a person who's in an office, and so they have a desk, and they have obviously a chair, probably have a little conference table, I mean, something where the two of us
right.
can sit.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, they have a chair sitting in front of theirs. And on their desk is nothing except my resume.
Okay.
Absolutely plain, clean. On the wall, you'll see charts, graphs, schematics. It's an engineer, see schematics. You see that kind of thing, right?
Right.
You'll see if there's a credenza behind the desk, it'll have three or four books, not a whole pile of books. They'll be standing up precisely.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing there. And so the person, probably because they often do, would you like a cup of coffee? And you think it's a thinker, you say, no, thank you, but I appreciate your asking. You know,
okay.
Because they don't really, they don't want to mess with pouring you a cup of coffee. I mean, it's just nuisance, right? And it's a distraction. It's not what you're here to do. So that's how you know who it is. Now let's say you come to the door and you knock on the door, and the person opens it, and you see this person with bright floral shirt on that's, it kind of looks like an art piece.
Right.
And obviously hanging outside. Now, they come intuitors come in two styles. They come in the absent-minded professor look. I had a professor in college that never seemed to have shoes that matched.
Uh-huh.
He'd have a brown shirt and, you know, whatever. Okay, so the absent-minded professor doesn't really know what they have on. And then the other is the very avant-garde, very stylish.
Yeah.
Either one of those is going to be an intuitive.
Okay.
And you can tell so much because, once again, their desks will be a mess. there's stuff all over. And the counters will be stuff all over. On the wall will be whatever style they are as an intuitor. In other words, it'll be like diagrams of a spaceship. Or,
yeah.
I mean, it'll be something that makes you think, that makes you imagine something else. It will be contemporary art.
Yeah, M.C. Escher paintings.
Yeah, you're not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's the absent-minded professor, it's probably a list of last year's students. You know, I mean, it's whatever is left over, right? And on the books will be very often, very typical. You will find like art books. I mean, that you open it up and it's just all types of art. So they're really easy to tell. Intuitor is probably never going to ask you if you'd like coffee. I mean, it's just they don't connect on that kind of practicality.
Okay.
They don't connect on the kind of routine things. They don't do anything the same. I mean, they kind of pride themselves on that. So they're not going to do the expected. And remember, as an interviewee, real easy to get them distracted into whatever you want to talk to.
All right. What about the feeler?
Oh, the feeler. I mean, they even give you a hug. And they'll say, oh, I've been looking forward to seeing you. Oh, my goodness. I'm so looking forward to talking to you. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And your immediate connection, you'll feel the connection. You'll actually feel the warmth, the connection. Mm-hmm. Pictures of the company picnic, grandchildren, family are all over, right? What are they wearing? They're wearing something soft. They like tweed. They like sweaters. I always think that they like things that are huggable.
Sweats.
Yeah, soft. It's nothing, no hard fabrics.
Yeah.
There will invariably be Kleenex on a counter. And most often, 90% of the time, there'll be a bowl of candy. Nothing I think is so fun because anyone in that company or that whatever it is, if they have children, the children know where the feelers are. First of all, because of the candy. But
right.
Second of all, they know that person will welcome them and be glad to see them. And so they invariably bring them drawings that they've done at school.
All right.
So you'll see, then you'll say, oh, you must have age. You must have grandchildren. Oh, no. You know, that's John down the way here. His grandchild comes in about once every 2 weeks and always brings me a picture.
So the sensor, our last one.
Sensor. A sensor is, the body language is just so strong. I mean, you better be ready for grip. And one of the things I would say is most women do not shake hands well, because we are two women talking. I'm going to say this right now. So be sure, I always say, go for the gold.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when you shake hands, you go all the way in.
Yeah.
Don't, none of these, you know.
These fingers.
You know, fingers. And none of the soft, you know, like the poor little fragile things you can't, you know, grip. You'll surprise them. But it's an immediate respect getter.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when a woman shakes hand properly, I observe people all the time. And I get such a kick out of watching the men are surprised. And it's a good thing, because suddenly now we're talking business. That's why we're here. We're here to talk business. And so that person will have on, that's another one who got up that morning, put on whatever probably was right on the chair from last night.
Mm-hmm.
So probably, and the poor darlings, because they can't get out of the house and still not, and still be unwrinkled, you know, because they're moving fast. Invariably, whether that's what they're supposed to or not, they'll have their sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
So if it's someone that in, at least in the old days, would have had a suit and tie on, I can guarantee they don't have a suit and tie on, the jacket on tie. The jacket is thrown over one chair and the tie probably across the credenza. And their desk is a disaster, but they can find anything under there. So anything you ask about or comes up, they can say, oh, I can find that. I can get that right now before. And it'll be the third pile under the second coffee, you know, spill. I mean, they can find anything and they can find it right now.
And when you're talking to them, you get to the point, right? They're busy, right, and you get to the point. You think, thank you for having me, and here's my agenda, and here's what I need, and here's what I can do for you. And
but you do it with good spirit.
Right.
So it's a different attitude. I always say humor is really difficult, because what's funny to another one person isn't to another.
Right.
But I found a new out-of-the-way restaurant the other day that was really out of the way. And I walked and walked and walked. And finally, I got there and I walked in and I said to the receptionist, I said, I found you. I deserve an award. And so we were laughing, joking. Okay, that's the kind of thing, you know, that kind of approach to a sensor they like.
Yeah, okay.
Don't take yourself too seriously. Don't be silly. I mean, maybe you'd consider what I just said there was silly, but say something about, this is a very impressive building. Isn't this the biggest one in town?
Yeah.
Because they like things that are strong and big, and you know, and say, if you're going to say something, if you've noticed, maybe you've come through, maybe you've been brought through an area where there were people working, and say, you know, obviously things are getting done here. It shows a lot of focus. So that's what you're leading for. You know, you emphasize, you know, everything you're talking about is emphasized as you get to the point. Do not digress. Do not go off on tangents. Do not tell stories. Do not be touchy-feely at all. Speak a little louder than you typically do. And it's okay to speak faster than you do. Above all, do not appear laid back. Lordy, you'll be out of there faster than you came in.
Jane, this has been so much fun. We've reached the end of our hour, but this has been such a delight. I can't wait to go out in the world and try to analyze everybody I see tonight and talk to them in their language.
Yes.
Let me remind our listeners, this has been an episode of Living Downstream, and I'm your host, Julie Lowe. I've been speaking with Dr. Jane Erickson-Walker on effective communication. If you dropped in late or missed any part of this interview or any other interview in our series, you can find past episodes at UncleWatersheds.org. And thank you for listening.